Lord be with you.
And also with you.
Let us come to the scriptures again today. We've been migrating through different books of the Bible, from Exodus to look at the stories of the prophets to look at Ruth. And today I thought we would jump into the Psalms and do a little work in the Psalms. Now, I don't know about you, but usually the way I was raised in relation to the Psalms was you go and you find a psalm that fits what you're feeling inside, and it moves you along. Perhaps if you're feeling despair, it might move you along through that despair to come out on the end of hope. Or if you're feeling joyful and praising, it will start you out that way and move you along a little bit into a deeper experience of that praise. Is that how you all read the psalm?
Yeah.
You come to them. That resonates with me. I'm not in that place. I'm not going to read that one today. Or we read them planned and go straight through. Or we read them by different genres. You know, I'm gonna spend some time in the praise psalms, spend some time in the servant psalms, like that. Are there other ways you read the psalms?
Those are assigned in our devotions.
Okay. Lectionary, devotions, as a third party tells us to. Okay. All right, good. Today I thought we'd try and read the psalms, one psalm in particular, and if hopefully we'll have time, we'll do a second. Read the psalm as a migrant. So in other words, let's do some boundary crossing ourselves and step out of who we are and into the experience of someone who is migrating. Now, some of you are familiar with a migrant community or an immigrant community in your neighborhood. Some of you have heard stories or saw the film that we showed about four Mexican migrants. Others of you have read newspaper articles. You know, there are migrants from Russia, there are migrants from Thailand, there are migrants. So if you are familiar with one of those experiences, or you know people who have a migrant experience, a community that has a migrant experience, what we're going to try is coming to a psalm through that window of another person. All right, so that's the boundary we're crossing and the way that we're going to try and read into the psalm and see how it sounds to us. Are you ready? All right, let's give it a try. The psalm that I've picked for us, and what I'd be interested in is if you can do this with any psalm. I think you can, but I picked Psalm 10 for today. So let's look at Psalm 10. Would you like a Bible? I might have one here for you. See if that one works. There's another one back here if we have other folks in here. So let's begin, and you'll notice that your editors have put the verses, little spaces between certain verses, so they essentially present, at least in this, I have the NRSV edition, they're presenting verses 1 and 2 as a couplet or a piece that goes together, and then there's a little space in the next verses. So our editors are doing that for us, so we'll take those sections kind of at face value and follow the movement of the psalm as the editors have put it there. It begins this way. Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? In arrogance, the wicked persecute the poor. Let them be caught in the schemes they have devised. Where are you? What's the experience here that the migrant is going through?
Despair.
Yeah.
Wilderness.
Wilderness, uh-huh.
Abandoned.
Feeling abandoned, yeah.
Sad.
injustice.
And the injustice side by side with abandonment, right? That this is not the right thing, that one feel this way or experience this.
Uh-huh. From Vietnam, just out of war.
And it, perhaps in the coming home and trying to figure things out. Yeah, yeah. Verse 3. For the wicked boast of the desires of their heart. Those greedy for gain curse and renounce the Lord. In the pride of their countenance, the wicked say, God will not seek it out. All their thoughts are, there is no God. What do we have here? There's a shift, right? Where's the psalm moving us now?
A judgment.
A judgment, yeah. Which I'm not always comfortable with. I don't know about you. Right? And what is being judged? What is being labeled here?
Greedy and the wicked.
Greedy, greed, wickedness.
Uh-huh. There's also a bit of the other.
Yeah.
The psalmist has determined that whoever it is somebody that's not him.
Right. So I'm suffering because of another person's greed or another person's wickedness.
Or schemes that have been set up.
Traps.
To persecute or to belittle.
Yeah. And those schemes are meant to trap whom?
The poor.
The vulnerable.
The poor, the vulnerable, me, the migrant, right?
Sure.
And in condemning that, or in judging that way of being, what else is similar to that? It says, the wicked boast of the desires of their heart, those greedy for gain, curse and renounce the Lord.
The greedy are godless.
Okay. Yeah, so now we have a set of categories. One would be, all right, so let's see. We have greed. We have wicked, cursing.
Arrogant.
What other words do they use in those, in that verse, two verses?
Godless. Proud.
Yeah. Okay. And all of these things are against the psalm writer. Against me, against the one experiencing these things. So this is all against, I'm gonna put me, right? Whoever we are experiencing this. And against who else?
God.
Right. So notice that all of these things that are against the vulnerable, right? We call this the vulnerable. The poor. Are also, this is my sign for versus against. Sorry, I have my own little thing, but this means against. Against God. Right? So it looks very much like a line is being drawn. It's very black and white, right? There are those who are over here, and then there's me, and then God's on the side of the vulnerable. Those greedy for gain curse and renounce the Lord. Can I say that greed is wicked in this view?
Yeah.
Seems pretty fair. And that cursing God is wicked. And can I say, too, that being greedy is to renounce God? So there's some interesting lines being drawn here between hallowing God and doing the right thing, and cursing God and a certain way of being economically. So in other words, economic justice would be praiseworthy It's, if you're doing things justly, you're praising God. If you're doing things greedily, you are denouncing God. Can I say that from these, from the Psalms perspective? Okay. Does that make sense if I'm reading as a migrant? From this experience? Yeah. How so?
Are you asking me? Mm-hmm. How does that make sense? Well, that's my experience.
Yeah.
I'm turning to God as my own protection, although in this instance I'm wondering where the heck he is.
Right.
And then I can only assume that the people who are responsible directly or indirectly for my situation then are not on God's side.
Right.
I mean, it seems pretty black and white to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I'm complaining against God, too.
Yeah?
I mean, where are you? And they're not following you, and that's not just. Why don't you get a... take notice of this wickedness and remember it.
Mm-hmm. God, remember that all this greed and this cursing, greed is a curse against you. Remember that.
Yeah.
So don't put up with the greed if you don't put up with the cursing you. Take notice of the injustice that is against your, the way you've set things up in the world, the right way for things to be.
Actually, God... if you're diagramming, that should be very far up. It's the migrant and the
okay.
And the first line, oh, why, oh Lord, you stand far off. So God is like kind of off the chart.
Okay.
Up there.
All right, that's supposed to be an arrow.
Can you say that the greedy people are against me? And they're against God, but God and me are not quite together yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what she's pointing to. That the experience so far is that God is way off. Why are you so far away? Can't you see that this that's happening to me is a blemish on your name? Is a blemish on the way you've set things up? Yeah. Uh-huh. Good, nice. Other thoughts here? Good, let's go look at verse 4. I think I read this, but we'll do it again. In the pride of their countenance, the wicked say, God will not seek it out. All their thoughts are, there is no God. Does that make sense? In this world of how this greedy person is perceiving things, it seems like it's saying they should know that this is not the way to do things. But since there is no God, they can act however they want.
Yeah, we're getting away with it.
Getting away with it,
so
yeah.
God doesn't even know.
Yeah, so that God is far off the charts, if you will, serves this purpose. Yeah, there is no God. Yeah, there is no God.
We value that in American culture. We call it self-made man.
Yeah, the self-made person, the one who pulls them up by their own bootstraps and rises to the top. Yeah, yeah. How accurate is that? That understanding of the possibilities in the United States?
Nobody's self-made.
Nobody's self-made? Yeah, there are a lot of other people who are, and God, who are part of that.
Anytime you set yourself up with this pride thing, that's the original sin, and that's
right.
The thing that divided us in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we do see that this side is more prideful, with the greed and the wicked and the cursing and the arrogant and the godless and the proud, versus the vulnerable. Yeah.
Not everybody has the same opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question about what this says, though.
Yeah.
Is it possible that the wicked are not actually cursing and renouncing the Lord, except for by interpretation? In other words, their actions are a curse to the Lord? I'm just wondering.
That's the move I'm trying to make. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So the psalmist...
They don't always stand up and curse the Lord, you know.
Right, no, this says literally, the greedy, those who are greedy for gain, curse and renounce the Lord.
By their actions.
Well, it doesn't say by their actions.
No, but it doesn't say they're actually.
Okay, but those are two steps.
All right.
So let me just isolate the steps for folks. Because this says literally, those greedy for gain curse and renounce the Lord. And what you're suggesting and what I would like to suggest is that they, whether they're saying curse God or they're just being arrogant and wicked and greedy,
this is also a way. It's business. It has nothing to do with morality.
Yeah. That is also a way of cursing God.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're on the same page. Yes, sir.
Condition of their heart of no respect whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. A lack of humility. A lack of respect. Yes, ma'am.
I have the Living Bible paraphrase. I thought I'd show a different light on this.
Sure.
If you want to. It says, these wicked men, so proud and haughty, seem to think that God is dead. They wouldn't think of looking for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So they're just going on with business. Thinking God outside the machine, you know? God set it in motion, but now we're in charge. Kind of idea. Good. Let's go to, there we go. All right. Let's go to 5 and 6. They're starting with a pronoun. Who's the there here?
The wicked.
The wicked. Okay, so we're going to continue with the wicked. The wicked ways prosper at all times. Your judgments are on high, out of their sight. So far, the psalmist is agreeing, right? Yeah. God is off the charts here. You're out of their sight. They're not even seeking you, and you can't be seen anyway. Okay? As for their foes, that is, as for the foes of the wicked scoff at them. They have no enemies that they can't conquer. The wicked think in their heart, we shall not be moved. Throughout all generations, we shall not meet adversity. So there's a sense of security here.
And entitlement.
Yeah. No adversity.
They're invulnerable.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we have the vulnerable and the invulnerable.
They're smug.
So they think.
They are smug.
Doesn't that fit all of us in the sense that we really are bound up in the security of our employment, our commerce, and so we focus not on fairness to the person we are serving or fairness to the person who is selling us. We go to Walmart because that's the cheapest place.
Yeah.
I have a sense that the wicked, as we talk to him, is always somebody else and not us.
Right.
And then we're behaving in exactly that same way.
And I will ask you to switch sides, but right now be in the migrant position. Right? So we're reading this psalm as the vulnerable. We'll get to self-accuse in a minute, but but if we read as the vulnerable, let's take that example. Where are we going to shop? At the Walmart. At the giant Target, at the thrift store, right? We can't get away with things being as black and white as the psalmist makes it. I mean, Walmart can't be, I mean, maybe Walmart's the enemy, but to the migrant, that's the only place I can get my diapers, right?
Can we couch where you're, how did the migrant get in his disadvantaged position?
And where
does accountability come in here? I mean, at where along this line, you know,
is the migrant responsible?
Are you responsible? Mm-hmm. I mean, or is it so far beyond your capability to ever dig out of where you are? How do we view this person?
So where I'm coming into this story, I'll just tell you, I'm going to be Teresa. Teresa is, she's probably 45. She has a fourth grade education. She came across the border from Mexico 23 years ago. So she came across the border with a baby, a two-year-old. Her husband had died. She had, Yeah, her husband had died. She didn't have anything in Mexico to keep going, no relations. So she came up to Oxnard, started working in the fields, met a guy who was a citizen, army, and went into the army, served in Vietnam, or served, maybe it was Korea, I don't know, but served in abroad.
The first Iraq.
Could have been, yeah.
Vietnam was 45 years.
Yeah. That's too long, isn't it? So, no matter. He served honorably, came home, married her. They had a child together who's a citizen. And he started doing citizenship process for this son that was not his, but that had come across the border with his wife. And he started doing citizenship process for his wife, Teresa. He died, an alcoholic. In the midst of citizenship process. So now there is a younger daughter who is a citizen, dropped out of high school, had a baby. The undocumented son went to college at CLU, graduated, and now they're putting a life together. So I'm going to be Teresa as I read this song.
How old are you?
How old am I personally?
No, Teresa.
Oh.
she said 45.
I think she's 45 or 50.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She looks older than me, but she could be younger than me. She could be 40. She dropped out at fourth grade and had a child. So not at fourth grade, but was working from that time. So that's the perspective I'm reading from. You all may have picked a different perspective from which to read.
But I'm trying to.
But the question is
through
is responsibility.
What opportunities did she miss to avoid where she is now? Were there any?
I think
how
like
how responsible am I is what I'm trying to.
can we put that question on hold? I think it's great. I wrote it on the board.
It just bugged me.
So what is our responsibility as the migrant in this relationship between the ones we feel are wicked and through their wickedness and greed cursing God, essentially disowning God?
That definition you're doing has a lot to do on your perspective of where you're looking at whether they're wicked or not.
I'm looking through the psalmist.
Right, but I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and so if we're taking the migrant perspective, the wickedness comes because I can't feed my family. And other people are taking advantage of that.
Right, but if I said I really have a wicked bank account, I'd have a completely different perspective of that.
Right, so what the perspective we all have in common right now is the psalmist. So we're going to stay there. I'm going to make you stay there for 45 minutes. as an exercise. Yes,
or
sir.
I feel trapped.
You feel trapped.
I feel trapped. As the migrant, I have no way.
Yeah.
Your Walmart example, my first church was in a small town. Two grocery stores is 5,000 people.
Yeah.
The kicker to it was they all overcharged on everything because only the Hispanics and the African Americans could buy groceries. They were trapped in town. Anglos, we went to Houston.
Right.
And bought up the cheap stores.
Right. Mm. And so, to get on the bus and go, if there was a bus, no bus.
There was no way to get out of town.
So, again, you've heard of deserts in the city.
Yeah.
Food deserts, grocery store deserts, right, where you don't have access. And how are you going to take your two toddlers and carry the four bags of groceries you need, right? So, trapped, yeah. And from that perspective of being trapped, you look at everybody else and you say, their ways prosper. Your judgments are out of sight. I can't understand why there's this divide, this dichotomy between the way other people live and the way I live. And those people have no fears. I have lots of enemies, but they have no foes. They are not afraid of adversity. They seem to have all the security possible. Verses 7 and 8. The mouths of the wicked are filled with cursing and deceit and oppression. Those aren't things I would put together, cursing and oppression. Someone who curses God and someone who oppresses other people. But
maybe
they do
they're
seem...
not cursing God, maybe they're cursing me.
Well, okay. So, yeah, but a disrespect for life then, a cursing of, yeah.
I think certainly they're cursing those who are being oppressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Through actions or words, it doesn't matter.
Well, I have some examples I could tell you about having a school bus driver for 12 years.
Oh, I bet you could. Yeah. Yeah. Under their tongues are mischief and iniquity. They sit in ambush in the villages. In hiding places, they murder the innocent. Language and murder are side by side here. You will find this in the letter of James in the New Testament. Language and murder are side by side. So something to, I hear all the time, all those illegals, even among good-meaning people. Mm-hmm. Illegal is an adjective. It is not a noun. And so when we talk about it, how can a person be illegal if we as Christians confess that God made every person, God made humanity, then a person it can't be illegal in that creation. Illegal, they arrived illegally, then it becomes an adverb. They don't have legal documents, there's the adjective. But you can't have a noun. You can't have an illegal person. You can't talk about personhood that way. So, and here the psalmist reminds us that language comes so close to actual harm, intent to harm. Yeah.
Actually, this pejorative use of language like you're talking about, this is a very evil thing. This is a mm-hmm. this whole category of destroying the other in your mm-hmm. thought, in your heart, mm-hmm. and in your
language,
vocalizing mm-hmm. your language, that is condemned all over the place in the Bible, mm-hmm. Old and New Testament. Mm-hmm. For instance, you mentioned James, but Jesus himself mm-hmm. said that if in your heart you have a hatred for somebody, that's tantamount to murder.
Yeah. Yep. Jesus puts them together too.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Our brother Martin Luther, in explaining the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill or you shall not murder, mm-hmm. says that we are to fear and love God so that we neither endanger nor harm the lives of our neighbors.
Fear and love God so that we neither endanger or harm our neighbors. Yeah.
But then it says something else, doesn't it? But then you do as much as you can for
right.
all
that's
the
next, needy. That's the next line.
Yes. But that's speak well
but,
of them, defend them.
But instead, help and support them in all of life's needs.
Uh-huh. Which is amazing.
It's interesting all that put together under that particular commandment of not murdering.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many ways to murder, aren't there? You can kill a culture. You can kill a family. You can kill hope. All of those things that, yes, we need water and food to live, but we also need these other things. Community, a spirituality, a hope,
self-esteem.
A self-esteem.
Affirmation.
Yeah. Yeah. Affirmation. Yeah.
A language.
We need a language. Yeah. And what happens when that voice is taken from us? Yeah. Yeah. The next stanza. Their eyes were still on the wicked. Their eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. And again, this is the perspective of the vulnerable, right? The wicked may not be looking out to, you know, take pot shots at people who are vulnerable, but because they have certain practices that are, you know, in set in their business plan or set in their presidential race or set in their mayoral race or set in their whatever. There may be casualties along the way. So the vulnerable would feel that as a personal attack, perhaps. Okay. Their eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. They lurk in secret like a lion in its covert. They lurk that they may seize the poor. They seize the poor and drag them off in their net.
This is the Border Patrol.
This is the Border Patrol. Have you seen The Mission? The Guarani? And actually in the 1800s, the Spanish and the Portuguese are hunting slaves up above the falls. This is Brazil, Paraguay, before, right? And they're trapping them in nets like you would a bobcat. So this is not just a made-up image. Yeah.
And it's happening right now in Mexico.
Yeah.
All of that gang violence and oppression and all this stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
This is happening to people now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're more civilized, once again, I would say, in America, in that we're not using nets. But how helpless are they without the legal system or without a medical system? They are helpless, you know, and they would feel vulnerable, and that they would see the wicked. It's not that they don't have any enemies. It's they have the resources to get help when needed.
Uh-huh.
And the vulnerable do not.
Don't have the resources.
They're at the mercy.
Yeah, we sometimes talk about Social Security as a safety net, or, right? Or Medicaid or Medicare or, you know, some of our social programs, we talk about them as a safety net. And oftentimes that net isn't buoyant enough to hold people in a place where they can actually operate, function. They have to choose between their medications. They have to choose between food and medication. They have to choose between these things. Yes, sir?
It's hard for people like me who are over 70, and there's some in this room besides me, who have all kinds of advantages,
mm-hmm.
and for whom these social things function very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Happen to have been blessed by God with intelligence, so we think we're really smart and clever, to realize that there are people in this world who are, in fact, lurking and using stealth and so on, and it's happening, like, through the internet. I know this is a little bit off-target, but any one of you here who thinks that you're not can be vulnerable because those people are incredibly clever, and they could be just far enough ahead of you to draw you in. And once they've gotten, I don't know the details, but they can electronically take
your bank account, take your, So there are those lurkers.
So we can't think that we're not involved with the war.
We're not on the vulnerable side of the equation.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's quite easy to tip there quickly.
Another area that's currently really hot is like in Greece, there's a lot of human trafficking where they're drawing girls in from other areas.
Yep.
Very heavy.
Great opportunity. Get out of your economic situation.
Right.
Come to Chicago. Come to LA. Come to DC. Come to Iowa. Wherever. Yeah, and then you take their passport and they're stuck. Again, the feeling of being trapped or caught in a net and you can't negotiate. Yep.
From verse 4 to 10, no mention of God.
No mention of God now.
That's still a
very, nice observation. So at first the psalmist starts out naming God's distance. You are far off. And then noticing that that's how the wicked are operating too, as if God wasn't there. And then God disappears from the psalm itself. So the experience deepens of that sense that God is not available.
So it's really making an argument to God, in a sense, because he starts out with, God is not here, or where are you? And then he says, all these things are happening. And then he's going to say, a little bit later, he's going to say, okay, come on now, fix it. Do something about it.
Yeah.
So it's really setting up a kind of a logic argument. Well, now, these are all the reasons that you should be here.
Yeah.
Because this is what is happening to us, and then it switches.
Right. And so part of your question about, well, what does wicked mean, and how do we use that language? Well, if the psalmist is making an argument to God, the psalmist wants it to look as bad as possible. It may be that bad. Certainly that is their experience, that it is really bad. And in making the argument to God, they're going to use the language that will convince God. Look, these things, look, it's cursing you. The wickedness that they're doing is a curse against you. You have to get involved. You have to come back on the floor and walk among us and be here. In verse 10, let's get to the point where it shifts. They stoop, they crouch, and the helpless fall by their might. Here's God again. They think in their heart, God has forgotten. God has hidden God's face. God will never see it. Verse 12. Rise up, O Lord. O God, lift up your hand. Do not forget the oppressed. So there's the climax of the argument, right? That you're identifying. Why do the wicked renounce God and say in their hearts, you will not call us to account? And then we get another turn in verse 14. But you do see the affirmation there. So we've spent 13 verses looking at how bad things are and identifying, expressing the vulnerability that we feel, looking at this, and then saying, the wicked say you're not here, but you do see. You are here. Indeed, you note trouble and grief, that you may take it into your hands. Oh, that's interesting. God, you note trouble and grief, that you may hold it in your hand. Not zap it away, but hold it. In other words, all of a sudden, the big arm is coming out of the sky, or the wing, if you will. The psalmist liked the wings. Get the cap off. So the wing of God is coming down to enfold the experience and to be present. And this is happening through the psalmist's own affirmation. And it is amazing to me that this woman, Teresa, is the most active deacon in our church. No, nobody in her family has a license. She has. She gets on public transportation. She switches 3 buses. She gets to the hospital. And she will visit whoever in the neighborhood or in the church is in the hospital. She's not working anymore. Her partner is a gardener. But this is how she spends her time. Right? So if you asked her, Teresa, do you feel like the whole world is wicked and there's cursing and arrogant? She would say, yeah, I felt like that a few weeks back when my mother passed. But God is doing so much. That's what she would say. God is doing so much. So here's the turn in the psalm of the affirmation that comes from people who are so vulnerable and yet can affirm that God is present. The helpless commit themselves to you, and you have been the helper of the orphan. Now break the arm of the wicked and the evildoers. Seek out their wickedness until you find none. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations shall perish from God's land. O Lord, you will hear the desire of the meek. We had that word before, desire. Do you remember what was desired? In verse 3. Mm-hmm. The wicked boast of the desires of their heart. And now we come back to desires, but it's the desires of the vulnerable that will be known. Lord, you will hear the desire of the meek. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice for the orphan and the oppressed, so that those from earth may strike terror no more. So all of a sudden, the security that God brings into the picture just sort of scoops up this experience and holds it. Holds it. Yeah.
I have always noticed, having grown up from before birth in the Lutheran Church, that Lutherans always want to make a doctrine out of everything. I can't see a song like this as being forming a doctrine as much as it's a rant by this psalmist mm-hmm. when he considers what goes on in the world around him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of ranting about the situation, mm-hmm. but he still trusts God enough to where to give him his due.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And so if we come from the migrant experience, it puts some color on what this might look like in economic terms or political terms or whatever, neighborhood terms. And reading through a different person's experience is a border crossing for us. But look at the migration within the psalm itself, right? You start out with the why, O Lord, do you stand far off? And then you get this rant. Job is great at this. And what I love in Job is that the refrain keeps saying, and he never sinned with his mouth. You can rant. You can scream at God. And that wing will still hold you. And what happens if we, so we'll step out of our migrant experience now and step into ourselves, you can read this as a personal trouble. What if this is our rant about how unjust there is, how much injustice there is around us, and how we can't see a way forward? How do we fix the grocery deserts in the urban landscape? How do we stand with people when they're shopping at Walmart and we're trying to shut it down? Which side are you supposed to be on when there's five different sides? And both of them have some moral integrity, or all of them have some moral integrity. Yeah. So that we can actually enter into the psalm through another person's experience gives us a particular view. But note that always the psalm is going to move us, and maybe moving us into a border of using the language of wicked and cursed, and may God break the arm of the wicked. I have trouble as a Quaker somewhat saying that. I wasn't raised that way. But that rant, getting that out, is somehow freeing to then experience the affirmation that God is in the world. And by golly, I'm going to go out and work for it, justice again. And I'm going to have my actions not be a curse against God, but have my actions be taking responsibility in the community and working for God's justice and moving that direction. Other thoughts?
I flashed on the hymn, This Is My Father's World.
Yeah.
The wrong seems off so strong.
Mm-hmm.
God is the ruler yet.
Yeah. And that's what it's doing here too, right? With the kingship. Yeah. God is king. And that's what we saw in Ruth. Elimelech was her family. My God is king is Elimelech in Hebrew. My God is king. And what it means to confess that we won't put Bill Gates, no matter how much good he does in the world, we won't put him on a pedestal, and we won't put, you know, who is ultimately in charge? And when we don't see God, is there a way in which our language, our liturgy, can move us into a place to reaffirm God's presence in the world? And maybe if our liturgy can't do it, maybe our service can do it in the world. And when our service fails us, we can't build enough houses to feel like God's presence in the world, maybe then the liturgy can bring us in and be this conversation between worship and service in the world. Yes, sir?
I'm wondering about this last
line in verse 18,
mm-hmm.
so that those from earth may strike terror no more. What's that reference? Those from earth?
Where's God?
Yeah.
God's up there.
Yeah, and so if there's God's heaven and the earth is...
So the ones who are operating on the earth are these folks.
Exactly. So that's the earth. They're in charge of creation.
No, they're just striking terror on creation.
Okay.
I think. Because the affirmation...
Dominating creation, then.
The affirmation is, Lord, you are king forever. The nation shall perish from God's land.
Yeah, okay.
So then... Those from the earth may strike terror no more.
Okay.
Right? It's as if somebody else took over your vineyard,
okay.
and you're coming back to
okay,
claim the vineyard,
yes.
I think. Yeah.
The question is, screens of Maya, where are the righteous? Whether you're an immigrant or a citizen already.
Right.
And if God's going to come answer me, it's got to be through the righteous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm looking for someone as an immigrant who's going to give me an even break and not manipulate the power that he or she has over me. Isn't that what the person's asking for? And so I guess if I'm a well-to-do person, I got this asked, well, am I wicked?
Mm-hmm.
To go to the other side of this equation.
Yeah.
And, gee, where are the righteous people if they're people? If I'm putting myself in the role of the migrant, where are the righteous? And
mm-hmm.
that's where it indicts me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the answer, I mean, just to take it a step further personally, is rather than fighting wickedness, is maybe it's better to be more righteous personally. If I'm not...
Yeah, and look at how this psalmist defines what is right. Righteous, I mean...
It should say justice.
It should say just, thank you. Yeah. Righteous gets a bad rap. She's so righteous. Right? But what we're talking about here, righteous is the same word, Greek, dikaiosune, and the Hebrew equivalent, is justice. So how is justice defined here by the psalmist? What is just action in this psalm?
To do right for the orphan and the oppressed.
Okay. Do the right thing for the orphan and the oppressed.
Give them a fair break, as you said.
Give them a fair break, yeah?
Prevent terror.
Help the helpless. Shore up the vulnerable.
And not be greedy.
Not be greedy.
But there's a difference between righteousness and self-righteousness.
Yes,
yes.
Because we're only righteous because of Christ. His righteousness.
Okay. Notice that, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, part of the understanding of righteousness is, in addition to justice, is that things work as God intends that they should work.
Right.
And when things are unjust, they're not working according to God's way.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And God intends that people be cared for. God intends that life be fair. Or God intends
I think when I look at the footnotes say that 9 and 10 may be the same psalm and acrostic.
Mm-hmm.
And then verse 9, God will judge the world. This is in verse 9. But with righteousness he will govern the peoples with justice. And then verse 19, O rise, O Lord, let not human beings triumph. It's almost God's got to act.
Yeah.
More so than human beings.
Yeah.
Everything's... God needs to come and rescue.
God has to come back into this equation because I think you're right. What's missing from this equation are those who do justice on behalf of the vulnerable. And what is always striking to me in our scriptures, it doesn't matter which book you open, it's going to be there, is that the just thing to do is always on behalf of a vulnerable person who cannot, because of the system or whatever, make the justice happen for themselves. And this is so different from how I was raised to be Christian. I mean, not the Quaker side of my family, but you know, that you had to believe this. You had to pray this way. You had to have your devotions at 6 a.m. in the morning every day. This is how I was raised as a little girl. Maybe some of you have had that experience. Yeah. And what I read in the scripture is, no, you don't have to pray at the same time every day. But you do have to go stand with someone who is more vulnerable than you. And imagine how the world is for that person. And ask them what would make it better. Because you don't know. Because you're not standing in their shoes. So it's this... I'm convicted every time I read something in Scripture that this message is there throughout.
How do you deal with the parable of the workers in the vineyard? Not an equality there of what you're receiving for your work.
No, but in that gospel around it, there is.
Yeah, but I'm saying that this is almost that times minus one. That you know, I worked all day. Yeah, and this guy came in and got the same thing.
Exactly.
Where's the justice in that?
Where is the justice in that? Yeah. It's God's justice.
Yeah, but I'm getting exploited by that wicked vineyard owner.
No, you agree for a wage in the morning.
Right. That's where I come on it.
Yeah.
The deal's a deal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Deal's a deal. That's a whole other one, isn't it?
It always angers me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You like to put a little hole in the... No, it's helpful. It's helpful because... Every time we think we have an answer, there's another way to look at it.
That's why I go with grace.
And we got to come back to grace. Yeah.
Well, the disciples said, Lord, teach us to pray. Among other things, he said, pray, save us from the time of trial and deliver us from evil.
Mm.
And some of us have gone almost all of our lives without understanding that. But Martin Luther kind of defined it pretty inclusively, the devil, the world, and our own sinful flesh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the source.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an overwhelming amount of evil available out there
mm-hmm.
in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this time I find myself as one of the oppressed because I think the system works against me.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next minute I find myself among the wicked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm both of these.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Satan
characters, whatever, in this particular son. I'm not one or the others.
Right. And so what does it call you to?
Well, repentance,
uh-huh.
for one, and uh-huh. some action.
And some action.
For two.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on to this conversation, and you're entering in from the migrant experience. And I'd like you to make yourselves comfortable. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing that. Or get in a space where you can see inside your eyelids. You know what I mean? You just glaze over your eyes and think with me. I'm going to read another psalm. And I will want to know how you hear it differently. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. The Lord makes me lie down in green pastures. The Lord leads me beside still waters. The Lord restores my soul. The Lord leads me in right paths for the sake of the Lord's name. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long.
I wish that to be true for everyone.
Mm-hmm. What do you hear in the 23rd Psalm that's different?
Confidence in the Lord.
Ah, confidence in the Lord.
Assurance.
Awareness of a very close God, not a distant God.
Yeah. The God has come very close in this. And yeah.
The only thing it's important to realize that it's not that God is coming closer, but it's that, because God's already here. And he constantly says, you know, do not fear, for I am with you.
Mm-hmm.
Our awareness of where he is can vary drastically at different times in our life.
Yeah.
And the more aware we are of whether we're sinning or sainting at any given time, I think will affect the decisions we make at that point,
mm-hmm.
in both our grief and in our celebrations.
And the Psalms are our perspectives on God, how we're experiencing God. Yeah, even though God never moves,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed the first half, the psalmist is speaking of the Lord in the third person, and then halfway through, it's you.
Yeah, it's you.
And so
comes
even
closer.
The song, the Lord comes even closer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir.
God is migrating with me.
Oh, nice. God is migrating with me. He said. Yeah. God is moving with us. It's the Shekinah. It's the presence of God. It's the tent in the wilderness that, you know, pick up the stakes and it comes with you. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
For the first time, it kind of made me want to cry because it's so individualistic. It's me. I'm so privileged. And there are those that are outside.
Yeah. It's personal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you wonder when you're a migrant, it's when you want to hear that personally.
Yeah.
Whether it's death or illness or confusion.
Yeah.
When you're looking for the 23rd Psalm, you're a migrant.
Yeah. You're in between places on a journey. Yeah.
Well, look at when you contrast the two Psalms, the first one we had is, where are you, God?
Uh-huh.
And the second one, he says, you are my shepherd, and using those terms. I expect all this. I expect you to, you know, he's claiming this care,
mm-hmm.
that he's going to get,
mm-hmm.
you know, so what's the big deal, you know? I expect you to honor me, you know, take care of me, God.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's saying, why aren't you?
Uh-huh.
So it's,
at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then there's the turn.
Yeah.
But you do see
yeah.
God. Yeah. You do see. Yeah.
But as we grow in that awareness of that personal God giving us that grace, there is a response. Go, make disciples. Maybe that 11th hour worker may have heard at 10th hour or the 9th hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, help know that the grace comes to all people, and you are to share that grace.
And they're pitching in
yeah.
at that hour.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you all for the work and the study that we've been doing this week. I know many of you may be leaving today, or sorry, tomorrow. We'll have another Bible study this same time tomorrow, and we're going to look at creation and migration, how God migrates with us, right? So we'll come to that. But I want to thank you for all of you who have participated today and listened and spoken and pondered. Let's take a moment in prayer before you launch to your workshops. Lord God, we affirm you as our shepherd, as Lord of our lives and of creation. We ask that in times of need we could feel your tenderness and your closeness to us, and that all who need your presence would also know you in that intimate way. We ask, too, that you would soften our hearts and help us understand and even read Scripture from another's perspective, so that we can even see more sides of your grace and maybe even experience more of the call to service and justice that you would have us follow in this world. In Christ's name, amen.
Amen.